So I'm going to call the meeting to order. We're waiting for Tamara Lunt from PBN. And Brett, can you give her a call maybe and see what's going on? Why are you laughing?
She's laughing because a knitting ball fell on the floor.
But anyway. Oh, good.
Putting it away.
You broke it.
I broke it.
That's the charge of trouble. There
you go. Fixed it. Can you still hear me? Okay. I won't touch it again. Okay, I'd like to just have a roll call, please. And maybe just come down from the Senator Barry and call yourself out as president.
Here.
Bukan.
Bukan?
Bukan.
It's okay. Bukan, here.
Just call him Brett.
That's fine.
Schultz.
Here.
Oh, and Carlson.
Okay, here again.
Oh. You didn't get Tom.
You didn't get Tom.
Oh,
my.
Yeah. Here.
Okay, Brett, we do expect you to know the members now. Just a matter of protocol. Okay, thanks, folks. In terms of the agenda that's there, there are some revisions to the agenda, and I'll say this as best I can, and Brett may clarify. I'd like to add a new number one under old business, and that is work to be done by the HPC with city staff and council members as suggested within the March designation hearing on the Hotel Carlton. A number of things came up which I believe deserve our full attention. The other thing is, I'm going to let Brent describe this based on a conversation we had up here. Two items from planning and zoning came to his office on Thursday, correct?
Correct.
If you could just fill us in quickly on that. And those would be added under new business?
Correct. We received on Thursday afternoon some building permits on some buildings that are on the potential or on the challenge list. And I had sent some information up to PBN on Thursday afternoon, got some information back from PBN on Monday. So I'd like to discuss two of those permits with HPC members this evening, if possible.
We didn't get anything emailed yet, did we?
No. No, I had to, it'll be in your screen.
I think it would make sense if you would identify the two buildings.
Well, when I get to that point, I don't know.
Okay. So that's under new business. The other thing under new business would be Brent sent around an email on a PAN class on residential design of the 1920s, and there was a building boom that PAN is holding a class in Rochester, and people are invited to, so we'll have a brief discussion with Brent about that. So could I have a motion to amend the agenda or any other comments about that?
Yes, I have a comment. Just as a matter of protocol, I really do not like anything being added at the last minute unless it's totally an emergency.
We're going to wait to talk about that at the time. I don't disagree with you.
I'm going to vote against the agenda.
Then that makes sense.
I just think as a matter of policy and protocol, we should not, unless it's an emergency, have anything added to the agenda that we haven't had a chance to review for at least a day or two in advance.
In my opinion, it should be within the packet.
Yes, exactly. Because the public might weigh in on it, somebody might want to comment to us, and we're going to be asked now to act on something which we haven't even physically seen at this point.
We're going to hear about it. We're not necessarily going to be asked to act upon these things, I hope.
It's up to us.
Okay.
And I mean, based on the conversation we've had, I have an opinion on
that. Yeah.
But I think it's inappropriate to talk about it now because it's essentially new business. Even if we decline it and give guidance for the next time something like this comes up. So I understand how you might vote, and I appreciate the comment at this time.
Okay.
Any other discussion?
Did you want to bring up the what we talked about earlier about pursuing some of those properties, or how do you want to address that?
Chair, are you looking for a motion at this point?
I'm looking for a motion on the agenda, but Member Carlson is asking about another item.
Maybe to be discussed on the agenda would be the party of the willing, as it were, the one you'd mentioned to me. Or is that something we want to talk about?
My opinion is that doesn't have to be brought up today, because okay. We talked about it other
yes.
times. It would be under old business rather
okay.
than under new business.
Okay.
And we've covered it repeatedly, so I think something happening with that sort of falls within the realm of what we've talked about.
Okay. Okay.
Do I have any other discussion, or do I have a motion?
I move to accept the amended agenda.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Motion carries, with Mr. Skolnick being the one member voting against it. There is an open forum at this time, and I'd like to invite any member of the public who would like to speak.
Point of order. Should that open comment period take place before the PBM group is here? This is what my comments relate to their being here. Oh, okay. I was unaware of that. Okay.
She'll hear them.
Okay.
Okay. She does look very different than she did the last time she was here.
I have some things.
Yeah. We do like to be personal, you know? Okay.
John Kreisel, 22 3rd Street, Southwest Rushing, Minnesota. I hadn't planned to speak, and I know that might shock some of you, but I mean that sincerely. What I've been seeing these last few months is a dismantling of public discussions. Some might use the word bullying within. And so I was going to kind of change a little bit what I was going to say. I see that what's currently taking place, therefore the reason for such an important reason for the HPC to bring forth to the City Council for a form of a hearing, that of discussing the establishment of a historic district. I look at what currently is taking place as a second dismantling of our community, the first being, you might say, urban renewal. This charge that all of you have is very important. The eyes are on all of us in this community, especially HPC right now, because of more openness potentially in discussion with different types of electronic media. The criteria or the discussion seems to get down to the point of subjective interpretation, which involves semantics. Rather than, in my opinion, looking at the charge as put forth by an ordinance for the first time based on all of us that have come before us, which is coming before us for multiple decades, I'm going to say 40, 50 years, the accomplishment of having an ordinance is big now, bringing forward also with your charge to having an historic district to the City Council so that there can be a hearing to try and put that off, namely not having an historic district before we have a benefit package. That task I hope would be accomplished at some point in time in the future, but if we don't have the district first and wait for the package, all will be gone, it'll be too late for the package. So this is an important charge that all of you have to bring this matter forward to the City Council in the form of a hearing. Thank you. Any questions?
I don't know if it's because I missed the last meeting. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I think it would maybe be inappropriate for me to go through a synopsis of what took place, because there were...
is it all right?
The question is a lot easier to grant.
Is it all right with folks if we're having commissioners ask questions of the people speaking in the forum?
I'm sorry. He said, do you have any questions?
And I'm just, it's not something we always do, so I'm just checking.
Well, I appreciate the question.
No, and I'm not questioning that. It's just we haven't done it often, so I'm just checking with the commission to make sure.
Well, it's nice doing things for the first time.
Yeah.
which is, you know, related to the Historic Preservation Commission. So, Brent, there's people that engage in discussion that are weren't maybe present to other commission discussions. They end up voting on issues that may or may not be inappropriate. And I'll probably stop there.
Okay. I guess I'll just keep an open mind and keep your thoughts open.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Anyone else have questions of Mr. Friesel? All right. Is there anyone else who would care to speak? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to close the public forum. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda, and the only item there is approval of the HBC meeting minutes of February 27th, 2018. Has everyone had a chance to review those minutes?
Yes.
Do I have a motion?
I move to approve the minutes.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, I'd like to call the question. All in favor of approval of the February 27th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could I request that if you could remember to indicate who makes the motion, who does the second, for people that are listening to the recording,
audio.
I think it would be helpful to them.
Yeah, thank you for that reminder. The person making the motion was
me.
Was Jamie. The person seconding it was Mr. Skolnick, and motion carried unanimously. Do you want that for the consent for the agenda too? Setting the agenda.
I just
in the future. Okay. All right. We're now under old business. And because some members were not, a number of members weren't present at the council meeting, and I don't know if they've listened to the council meeting minutes, a number of things came up, and members who followed it, I'd simply like observations from HPC commissioners about any work that we would need to be doing. Although, you know what, I may say, I may change this. Tamara's here. And I apologize. Brent, would it make sense to have Tamara go first? Yeah. Huh? And that's I apologize for. Is revising the agenda to reverse that order acceptable to the commission members?
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Proceed is what she's looking for.
Good evening. Thanks. That is what I'm looking for. Good evening, Commission. Bear with me while I learn your technology. And you have this on your screens.
Yes.
Correct.
Right here.
Okay. So, this slide will look familiar from the very first time we presented to you, which is a brief summary of what the premise of the Downtown Historic District Designation Study was. The fact that it is intended to fulfill the requirements of Chapter 19B of your Heritage Preservation and City Ordinance. The site visits that took place in the fall of this year informed our study findings, and we've twice revised the designation study, both in January and March of this year. So, we're going to see a few maps. The proposed district boundary that we settled on when I was here in February is shown above. It includes 40 total properties, 31 of which are contributing and 9 of which are non-contributing. Your non-contributing properties are primarily newer in part because of the proposed removal of a building that would have changed some boundaries. We had also pulled in the boundary at the east, away from the river, because of, again, some advice and guidance from HPC and the city. After I was here with you in February, we discussed pulling the boundary back down below 4th Street to include both the Riverside Building and S. McAndrews Building. And that is the boundary that was included in the latest revision of the destination study. Questions about any of these maps?
Yeah, the January revision, that was based off of staff input?
That was based off of staff input.
Tamara, could I just ask that in terms of, this is not within our packet.
Oh, the presentation?
Yeah, so it would be good to have the presentation shared after you've made it, if you could send it to
Brent. Sure, and I sent it to Brent today, because I was...
And I appreciate that. I'd just like to have it within my files rather than...
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Just one point of information, that the staff input wasn't the current staff.
That's right.
It was previous city staff.
Right. That's correct. And so after meeting with you all, the directive was given to put the boundaries more in line with what we had initially presented, but we did keep the two properties closest to the river on the east out of the boundaries, and that was discussed by the commission. So your city criteria for designation, the downtown commercial historic district represents two criteria. Criterion A contributes to the character, interest, and value of part of the development, heritage, or cultural characteristics of the city, state, and or country. We see three distinct periods of development in your downtown commercial core: 1870 to 1889, 1890 to 1945, and 1946 to 1962. And we will discuss what properties contribute to that and where they're located.
And what the basis is for those years space that
yes.
spread.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So,
Tamara, how long will this take, just so we're sort of thinking about this?
About 7 minutes.
Okay.
And also criterion H for location, scale, or other physical characteristics representing an established or familiar visual feature or neighborhood, district, or community. Then we have a much more detailed explanation that you have in front of you, and you will have it both in the packet and you'll have it in the slides. So I have criteria B, so we'll skip these, then we'll get to summary findings. So the proposed period of significance is 1870 to 1962, which begins with the oldest extant building within the district, and it's with the year it was placed into service or constructed. We don't begin periods of significance when a building is under construction, but actually we begin once it's activated. And it ends with the construction of the Crossroads Shopping Center, which demonstrates a movement of commercial activity away from the downtown core. 1870 to 1889, to your point, Madam Chair, is that it reflects an early growth of the city as a regional commercial center. It places Rochester in an architectural context that is very similar to other Minnesota river towns, and we see the construction of contiguous lots of storefront buildings, usually one or two stories, mostly of masonry, and they have sort of a consistent rhythm of punch openings at the upper level. 1890 to 1945 represents the city's evolution from a regional center to a city with a niche industry and a statewide presence. You see the continued development of contiguous storefronts in 1890 to 1910, and then you start to see the construction of really specialized functional buildings from 1910 to 1920. So these buildings are less built as sort of speculative commercial enterprises, but more for a specific function. And then you see limited new development during the Great Depression and World War II, which is common nationwide. 1946 to 1962, as I discussed with you before, is a really unique and exciting period in Rochester because you see continued post-war development in downtown, whereas in other urban centers of this size and larger, that push is to the fringes of the city and into a more suburban core. You see that throughout the 1960s, and you also see a distinct modernization of some of the earlier generation of buildings. And those buildings we've actually recommended as contributing to this period rather than the earlier period, because that alteration of storefront is a really important architectural move in the United States. we assess the district for integrity, we consider location. Your downtown has now moved. Setting, does the downtown core have a similar street grid, similar proximity to transportation lines? Do building functions often stay the same? Are they near major commercial centers or government centers? While your downtown commercial district was larger during the period of significance, the impact of new construction and demolitions have sort of limited the area in which your downtown commercial core, as represented today, has integrity. The design, we evaluate both the street grid, the building blocks, and density of buildings themselves, as well as some of the visual characteristics and design of the buildings. Similarly, we look at commercial construction, often masonry, very rarely wood, but every once in a while. Workmanship varies by district, but it's usually how a building expresses sort of by hand of the designer or the construction team. And then an association is sort of the hardest thing to quantify, but does it feel like downtown? Is it associated with the city's history and its sort of urban concentration? So one question that you had all asked was if I could show you which buildings represent which period in a graphic way. The buildings shown here represent the period of 1870 to 1889, which is that early development of the city and its commercial core. We have all the addresses and sort of the most commonly associated names of buildings. When we move into 1890 to 1945, we see the development in green here. We show all the addresses and, again, the names of buildings, and you will see as building businesses move. Sometimes they are the most prominent tenant, and so we'll see them repeated. In 1946 to 1962, the investment is much smaller, but the buildings are actually really significant in size, a couple of them. And so you see those four buildings represented here. And then here they all are together with the red representing non-contributing properties. And so graphically, that gives you sort of an impression of the development of your urban core. And that is the end of my graphics. So questions for me?
Are there any questions for Tamara?
Yes, I have a quick question. All of those buildings that are identified as just commercial buildings as their original name, mm-hmm. is there any chance that any research could be done to name more of them?
You know, it comes down, certainly we could. What it comes down to is those are buildings that turned over a more regular stream of tenants. And I guess my one caution would be to assign one particular tenant might dismiss the presence of other tenants in that they did turn over quite a bit.
No, it would have to be the original.
The original tenant?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was multiple tenants. And so then I think, would we want to look to owner or construct? So this is where we get into how, like, naming conventions. Okay. I'm open to any one of them. I would seek my direction from you as to what you would prioritize. We can do architect. We can do what I would call developer or building owner, or we can do sort of key anchor tenants, such as it were, which is usually first floor. Most of these buildings would have had a residential.
So, in my mind, owner would be... For you to clarify, the notion of having some buildings just named commercial...
Yeah, there's a lot of...
It makes them less worthy when it might be, not be a good reason for them to be less worthy.
Right.
So, is there a good naming convention for
okay. them? So, you would look to then maybe owner or anchor tenant as we can identify.
And I would look for you to make a recommendation.
I think either or...
Just so that we have a name other than commercial building.
I like commercial buildings, so I will say that here, owner or just because it shows like the vibrancy of a downtown to me. But I think owner or like first major anchor tenant would be an appropriate move. I less prefer, and this is my preference, and I will own that, assigning architect, because I think that really distances who used the building and who was fiscally responsible for the building from the downtown. But that is certainly popular and well-established convention.
How many buildings are identified as commercial buildings?
I would say about a third. Yeah, a third to a half. And, there's and that just has to do with being, and most of them really are in the earliest period.
Right.
And much of that is being a young moving town and sort of people coming and pulling out stakes relatively quickly.
I would look for you to decide that or make a recommendation and to think about what would be most valuable to the community.
Okay. So
So we're wanting them to own these buildings as their own historic heritage.
Yeah, that's the blank building, not the commercial building.
Right, the commercial building. Then to that end, I think the recommendation I would make is I would assign it to the owner when we can find it. And then when that's unavailable, because sometimes the owners were groups of people, and then that gets a little unwieldy, I would assign it. As I said, my purpose is to stay away from architect unless it's a very significant architectural mission.
And then could there be some paragraph added that, or a couple of sentences
absolutely.
That explain that?
And why that was the recommendation.
Right.
And I think since there are so many, and you've given a very broad description of how it could be done, it might make sense to do the third of them for our review.
For your review?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, can I just ask the commission to be careful not to be talking over each other, to just be a little bit more respectful about stopping and starting so there's one voice at a time?
Thank you, Pat.
And so to that end, I will clarify that the direction that I have been given is to assign sort of an identity to the building based on either initial owner or sort of main anchor tenant from when the building was placed in service, and maybe do a third of those and submit them for commission review prior to proceeding that way. And then I will add a paragraph explaining how the naming convention was developed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It also strikes me that possibly the naming convention has to do with how they're most significant within the district. You know, I'm not sure exactly how that comes into play, but that's one of the key things I would hope the naming convention would accomplish.
And I would clarify that the naming conventions that we have devolved to now are the ways that the buildings were marketed in the media at the time. And so this next step is assigning a name based on a historical record and not how necessarily those buildings were marketed, which I will also explain in narrative.
Beard?
Based on your experience in submitting proposals such as this for historic districts, would you, after you finish this naming, which I assume would take a few weeks, I hope, what else do you think should be done before we do go further on historic districts? Is there anything else you think we should be doing, or do you think this, we're ready to go at this point after you do that?
I think you're ready to go after this point. I will take us to additional preservation opportunities and say, as you move forward with local designation, I think you do want to begin considering whether or not you want to pursue National Register designation for the district, because that has a, just by virtue of the fact that the State Review Board meets four times a year, the timeline on that is quite significant, and we've talked a little bit about what potential financial incentives for historic buildings are, and these would access those. And so that would be, which is less about an action on the study itself and more a discussion, I think, as you pursue local designation, considering whether or not national designation is something that the commission is charged with and feels passionately about and wants to pursue, because I think that's a question that it would be valuable to be able to speak to. And it may not be something that you're charged with, but it certainly has financial relevance for any of these buildings, and that they could begin to access historic preservation tax credits. And at the state and federal level, that's 20% of qualified rehabilitation costs. So as we're talking about, you know, ownership of these buildings, there is like a significant financial incentive to that process. That may not be something in your charge, but it's certainly worth being familiar with, so to advocate for designation generally.
But basically, my question was mainly, do you think, based on what you see here, that we're ready to go to the next step, which is inviting owner input and other input?
Owner input, and you could seek a preliminary State Historic Preservation Office review. Mm-hmm. You would submit.
That's what I was. Yeah.
You would submit the report to a gentleman named Michael Coop. And he would send it out to review, and then you would have sort of their recommendation, which might be valuable to take to owner review also, which is that the SHPO feels this.
How long would that normally take?
They get 30 days.
And that's part of our ordinance as far as the requirement, and is a logical...
You're a certified local government, so...
Right. No, we are not.
You are not?
We've not applied.
Oh.
Yeah. We're qualified people.
You're qualified.
But we're...
For more financial.
But can you make any comment on the national registration in terms of your thoughts on the strength of this district?
So when we look at the, what I'm going to call the geography of the district, you do have a few gaps created by open lots. So does downtown Minneapolis, this historic district, so that is not an impossible hurdle. It does raise questions on behalf of the state review board because that is their charge. Do I think that that would be what I would call a deal breaker for them? I do not. They certainly recognize that the historical argument here is that you have a significant downtown core that represents a number of phases of your city's economic, commercial, and social and cultural development. And to that end, you have sort of enough buildings to make that case. As a group, their integrity is strong. Individually, you would face integrity challenges, but that's the beauty of a historic district is they act sort of as a one large unit. You do need at least 50% of your owners to sign off on the National Register designation in the long run. And I find that maybe where that disconnect is that there's a common misunderstanding that National Register designation places restrictions on a property. It does not. It is a lovely honor that accesses, if you're a nonprofit, Minnesota Legacy Grounds, if you're, you know, a for-profit operator of a building, potentially historic preservation tax credits, and if the state or federal government wants to come through and put a rail line through downtown, the buildings would be protected. But beyond that, National Register designation does not inhibit your ability to operate your building as you desire. But do I think, from a historic perspective, you have the strength of buildings, historic integrity, and a strong argument? I do.
Are there further questions?
Me? I'm sorry. So from what I understand, when you were referring to all the names that were in your report, those were no names that you gave. Those are names that you developed from what?
City directories, newspaper advertisements.
So is it an official list, or is it something that you just procured, like, when you were doing your report?
It's
like,
from archival research.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say an official list so much as that's how the owner of a particular building marketed the building or advertised the building or listed the building in a directory or newspaper.
Yep.
Or sometimes you do see it, like, autocomplete.
Yeah, and I get that. I was just wondering if there was a convention for officially naming them, and as you were mentioning that you just called others commercial properties, if you had a list from the city and we just said, these are what we call these buildings, or you're like, nope, when I assembled my report,
we did take it from the historical record. Mm-hmm. The commercial buildings were where we felt that maybe one particular tenant or marketing convention didn't stand out, but it wasn't just advertised by its address.
Okay.
Which is also not uncommon in a period. This is a building I built to rent.
Sure. No, I get it. I was seeking to find out if the city did that or if you assigned those names for the purposes of this report.
I would say the original owner assigned those names.
All right.
But I think, I believe perhaps, what Brenda's getting at is this is an archival protocol.
It is.
That is typically followed. It's not something unusual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that's where we get to a name beyond commercial building comes down to a number of conventions that we can choose from. And my recommendation would be owner or key tenant.
I was surprised that there weren't better photographs of a number of buildings.
Current or historic?
Both, but most, I was just sort of surprised. There are a number of fairly dark ones. It's somewhat hard to follow. And seeing it in this form, I would have thought they're as high a quality as they can be. So it's not a criticism, I just sort of...
So sometimes, and I'll show a photo like this, this is what is available. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a scan of a newspaper article. There are some photos that are available at the local historical society that to get the scan beyond what we have is a very substantial fee. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, for the purposes of a report, I guess that is not what we chose to use city resources. That is certainly something that we can change. From a photo of current condition standpoint, that's the reality of photographing in October, and if I went out and took some of those photos today, they would obviously look very different because my life
is very different.
Unfortunately, seasons do play a role. So if
there are and I was thinking more of the historic ones.
Yeah. Really, honestly, it's because we try to conserve on use these.
Okay. Any other questions? Staff, do you have any questions?
Can we ask questions of staff?
Yes,
at this time?
Certainly.
So, Brent sent me a note on this. I had asked him some questions, but maybe a little more clarification. If we were to designate this, to make this designation, what does that really mean from the property owner's perspective, if we were to make it a local designation?
Well, if it
What restrictions does it put on place? It opens up some. I just want to understand that piece. I know we're at the beginning pieces of this, but I just want to understand where it might go to.
If it gets to the point as it becomes a landmark district, any of those properties that are considered contributing properties, if they were to file for a building permit for any work on their building that is not exempt by Chapter 19B, it would have to come to the HPC for review and recommendation, and then go to the council.
Is it fair to say that if we designate all these properties, the contributing ones, then they would fall under the same restrictions we understand an individual designation would be granted? It'd be the same type of restrictions.
Correct.
So we could cover multiple properties with one vote or one action. Instead of hearing individual properties, we could say all of these.
Well, they don't become a landmark property, to become a landmark district. Property within a landmark district.
Right, but the landmark district has the same restrictions as incentives as well, as a landmark property. Then.
Correct.
Okay, that's what I understand that piece. Okay, thank you.
Are you asking in some cases if you could act in block on
certain
things?
No, it sounds like it is. This is a way we can make with one motion, we could pass judgment, but make an assessment and get multiple properties in one vote. Instead of hearing individually, we're hearing all of them at once. It's a group.
The district can't be created without all of the contributing properties. And for National Register, as Tamara said, it requires 50% of the owners to support moving forward.
That's for national.
That's
for
national.
For local, it falls to us and then the city council to make a we make a recommendation. City council would then vote, and they could, in one vote, they could make all these properties basically have the same as a. They'd be designated properties within a landmark district. Effectively, they're all individually. I'm just thinking like on our list, right?
Yeah.
Would they all have landmark listed next to them in our database, eventually
they'd
or something
have
contributing.
Like that?
They'd all be contributing towards this overall district.
Right.
Okay.
And as I understand it, I'll let Tamara, again, submitting something to SHPO for review, that submission is of all the contributing, all the members that are considered contributing.
Right.
And their judgment is based on a belief that all of the members, all of the properties identified as contributing would be identified as members of the district.
Mm-hmm. And that the justification for the district makes sense.
Is based cumulatively.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not you might have, okay, this building maybe on alone wouldn't have done it, but collectively it and three others that are right near it make for a compelling case.
Right.
Okay.
And usually that's why you do a district vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because the concentration represents something that a single individual building cannot.
Right.
But also that it does a landmark, a concentration, like a unique urban characteristic that is
It has a
part
feel
of the collective.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which I would say I did have some recommendations, which include if you do pursue this, you should consider design guidelines, both for the ease of the.
Are you ready to go into that right now?
Are
people done with questions?
About
the presentation made so far. Please do.
The non-contributing buildings in the district, my understanding is that there's no restrictions on the owners whatsoever unless we eventually choose to put some on it. At this, it would be no, normally there's no restrictions.
There are not restrictions. It is that they fall within the boundaries, and so we have to assign something to them, and so they are considered non-contributing. Most all of them were built in the late 20th to early 21st century.
Okay.
So they're just within the boundaries, but they're their own.
But I think what you're going to get to is you might make recommendations since they're around these buildings, they should be cognizant of what they're next to and maybe meet design standards that don't dwarf it or alienate the old historic properties. I think that's
and
what you're going to get
to. And that's what a set of design guidelines would be to help inform if, say, you have some of these empty lots and if construction is desired there, you can create in your design guidelines recommendations for your new construction in a historic district. So that they don't dwarf or
clash.
Thinking of, say, Minneapolis, like reflective materials are not desired because they distract and disengage from the historic district and they change a condition. So that is something which is slightly different than the existing buildings, but there is an opportunity and perhaps you consider an obligation to make recommendations on what makes sense on these empty parcels.
Is that a very common thing that when you designate a district, you put guidelines in place for that district right away, or they go at the same time?
They go at approximately the same time, mm-hmm. in part because then when a permit comes forward,
you know what to do.
The owner feels they know what their opportunities and constraints are, and it also helps the commission and the city staff evaluate whether or not work is appropriate on a historic building. Certainly, there are municipalities and buildings that do not have design guidelines. That is not a recommendation that I would make, because I think it's challenging for everyone, all of you, all users.
Christine, can I ask a follow-up to that?
Certainly.
I was just curious in terms of the timing. I'm always very conscious of the timing, the scheduling of these things. If we have a public hearing next, that we wouldn't have the design guidelines ready for the public hearing because we're not even sure what the owners would say or even if we're going to do it.
Right.
Based on what we say. So so let's assume after the public hearing, let's assume nobody complains about it and we go forward with the district. Then the council would get it. The council still would not get the design guidelines at that point. You first decide if the council would decide whether or not they would vote for the district. Only at that point would we do the design guidelines? At what stage?
I have seen it done in a number of ways. If it's clear that there's confidence in the district and support for the district, I would begin the design guidelines almost immediately after your vote because that timeline, as you say, impacts property owners. Their properties become landmarks and it is useful for them, and it is useful for the city, and it is useful for you to have some guidelines. And then I've also seen where it waits until city council has voted, and then the design guidelines are commissioned or developed, and then they come in front of you, and then they come in front of the city council.
Right. Christine,
wait one second. Before you go on, I'm going to let Gail, so it's not just one-sided.
This historic district is within the DMC footprint, and there are design standards for the DMC development, and I believe that and they were developed by the University of Minnesota. I believe there is some specificity about infill,
mm-hmm.
and so I think that's maybe a path we might want to go down is look at that first.
What does it say?
Yeah.
I see.
You know, be a lot easier to amend something
mm-hmm.
for infill within the historic district than it would be to start all over.
It's also very common, and again, I'll use Minneapolis because bless their hearts, they have some districts that all overlap each other, and that gets confounding as to which design guideline, and the guidelines then do exactly that. They say, for this, refer to.
And it's likely that any infill that would be done RMSC project, so it just makes sense.
This district is completely within the DMC district, yeah. And I would agree, and the DMC district design guidelines already have sections that talk about both old and historic buildings. Barry?
My only point was, if a city like ours, we don't really have any protections on any of these buildings from demolition. So I was just wondering, would we normally be advised to move forward to sort of protect them by creating the district before we do the design rather than do the DMC review, because otherwise it could be, you know, 6 months.
That is the general order. I would say there's more what I would be recommending is what the efficiency is. If you know that, if you're confident you're moving forward with the designation and it seems that that is the way to go, I would follow with the design guidelines soon after for clarity.
Is there any reason why we
go ahead.
Is there any reason why we wouldn't want to start that discussion now with the DMC and University of Minnesota who wrote the to start that in parallel to rolling this out as a district?
I think our questions may mean you have an overview of next steps. So perhaps we should let her present her overview of next steps. And that will also be part of what Brent will be sending to us, correct? So we will have that on file. Before we do that, Brent, you have a question?
Well, yeah, I have two, but I don't know if they're relevant, so I'm just going to be quick. One, if I have a question about the... So if a property gets identified, if we have a historic district, there's a property within it, and because it's a contributed property, while I know it doesn't get landmark designation, we've established the fact it gets treated like a property with a landmark designation. Do I have that correct?
I would want to look at the exact wording of your ordinance. I think we're kind of getting into semantics trouble here. I would say that once you landmark designate a district, the contributing buildings within it are the equivalent of a landmark. So I would say it's landmarked either way. That's
okay.
How I would understand it.
I was confirming that's what I thought. So then my question was, and that's why I don't know if it's for you or if it's a different discussion, if there's remedies or there's avenues if people want to be removed and from a landmark designation, if we pull a district together and properties don't get a landmark designation, then are they without a remedy to be pulled from a contributing property status?
I think that's a question we're not going to be able to answer right now.
Okay, that's fine.
It's a valid question. And Brent, if you could note that down, it's a good question to bring up in terms of our protocol.
And then I'll comment, because this was something that everyone had been kind of, a couple people had mentioned. It says here that no building or structure shall be erected, enlarged, altered, replaced if it's within a landmark district. So the way our ordinance...
You're looking at the ordinance as it's written right now.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and again, I note the section for Brent,
mm-hmm.
because it's part of what we said. There are some complications in the ordinance that we need to clean up before we proceed with...
And the reason I ask that is because what was stated earlier is if it's a non-contributing building, there's no effect and you can do whatever you want with it. But that
wording suggests that's not the case.
That's what I'm bringing up.
Brent, did you get that section?
Thank you. Those are my two
Mark?
Questions.
I have another question then about that. So when I looked at the list of properties that are in this district, they're not on our list of potential landmarks. Only three of them that I could identify. Three or four, a handful. Many weren't.
They were on a list that the council accepted that was a sort of a potential district outline.
Okay.
That is something that Tamara would have had the document that identified some of the buildings.
I guess we should need to add it to our database then as contributing properties to a potential district, maybe is the way to do it.
And Brent could get that for you. Or we can talk about that afterwards.
Okay.
It's referenced in some of the notes.
Yeah,
but then
I missed it then.
What it was done, it was the notion that history is never stationary. And what the 106 group had done was they had not looked at districts. And so some people who were working
it was all individually property focused.
Yeah, came up with a potential district, many of which are within what Tamara has done, and a preliminary outline of a district.
what I'm wondering is right now, if they're not on our list, mm-hmm. you know, how would it get, let's say someone else says, I'm going to demolish this building, and it's one of these contributing things.
How
is it flagged
is
to protect it?
Yeah.
With the other ones are flagged to be protected because they're on a potential list. Someone tears down one of these buildings or asks to be torn down.
Yeah, right now there's nothing in ordinance that would stop someone from doing it.
Yes, because they're not in your GIS system as flagged in any way.
Correct.
So this has come up before, and that's a good point, and Barry brought it up, but you're bringing it up in a different way.
Okay.
And it's something that I believe, should the commission wish, we could act on it tonight. We could request that this list become part of that potential list and identify and go on our website.
This list of contributing
this
properties.
This list of contributing properties as identified through mm-hmm. months of work from August through now and as reviewed three times now by mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. If we're comfortable with that, that would seem like a logical mm-hmm. motion.
Yes.
Yes. I agree with what you just said with one exception. Unfortunately, our ordinance, we thought it allowed for demolition protection for the potential buildings. It doesn't. So there actually is no protection in our ordinance for the demolition of potential buildings. That's why it becomes so important that in some ways that we move faster on that, because there is nothing in our ordinance that protects the potential buildings.
Again, I know you've been talking about that. Can we check with Pat to see where that stands? Because
I thought that
was being reviewed.
No, that's the problem. Anyway.
Barry, you may, and again, I'm just, you have your, but I'd like to look to Pat to give us some information on that.
I don't have any information on that.
Because you wrote a big piece for us that was then submitted to Terry Atkins, I believe.
There were discussions about some changes to the ordinance. But I don't know that City Council acted on those. And then we had change of leadership. And I'm aware that there have been discussions with individual council members, with city attorney, city administration. But I don't know that anything definite has been put forward. I'm not in an administration office like Mr. Spendy. He might have something else to add to that. They have not come to me to include me in meetings that would indicate to me that that's moving forward.
I have not been involved in any of those meetings.
I believe that the commission had acted fairly strongly that we believe this was important to assure that this review process was still in place. So what do we do now? I mean, we could make a motion on this that demolition permits on any property within this would be reviewed, and we as a group could, you know, discuss that and vote on that. I believe that's within our purview, is that correct?
Yes.
I believe given that, we could also make the motion that any property on the potential list would receive that same review.
Yeah, that's what we thought we had.
And then simply act on that and then let City Council get back to us.
And so there was something I did send to you about the practice right now with the GIS and the marking of that, so that kind of a red flag alert comes up if somebody comes in requesting something that might be inconsistent with a historical building. And when I talked to the city attorney that is no longer here, Terry Atkins, he had indicated that it would be prudent to put into the ordinance what the current practice is.
That's where I thought we were, and that hasn't happened. Mm.
So I believe that the commission, again, could make that recommendation that council act on that, amending the ordinance to reflect current practices, so that there would be a reading and a second reading and approval, hopefully, of that, and then that would get done within a month. But I'm not aware that.
I've not heard that it's happened. I mean, but with all the transition of changes of personnel, I did not know.
It hasn't happened.
Good.
Okay. Do people wish to discuss this further, or?
I'm cognizant of her time. Maybe yeah. We should get her on the road. I don't know. It's worth discussing more.
Well, I think based on what she's going to go through potential design guidelines. To some degree, unless we've answered this question, we're sort of putting the cart before the horse. Yeah. So, my thought might be that, you know, that this could be approached, that we would move that these buildings be subject to demolition review as was occurring, and I don't know how to phrase it, Pat, before the ordinance was adopted in December 2016. I mean, again, I don't know how to word what the practice that we've been following. I mean,
well, I think you could recommend that the current ordinance be amended to reflect the current practice in the planning department of marking on the GIS map these properties, and when there is a request for a permit, it is forwarded to HPC for review.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we are doing now, but again, it's not in the ordinance, and it should be if you want that to continue.
And I think there are two things going on. One is the sense that, again, we have oftentimes not been following sort of a logical protocol of doing things, because things are happening at all different times. So separately, we have a commercial district which has been studied at length, and we now understand that there is no review process in our ordinance. That means buildings being considered for demolition would come before us for discussion. So that's kind of a red flag. So to some degree, I think it might make sense to council to act on that, and then also make the motion that the ordinance be amended to reflect the process that we followed before.
Well, really what we're saying is that we want potential and landmark mm-hmm. properties to be reviewed for if they get to demolition. Really.
At this point,
we want to make sure the potential ones which haven't considered yet are still protected.
The
right?
landmark that's ones would be.
Right.
These
the landmarks are.
The landmarks are.
The potentials not.
The potentials are not. And this group of buildings aren't even labeled as potential.
That's right. I know, right. But it's a gap, to your point, Gary, that we have for all the properties. You know, we
so
thought the land, the potential.
Some kind of action.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would be right now or
yeah.
Maybe.
I'm fine with doing it right now. We've talked about this at length.
Mm-hmm.
For Tamara to give her discussion about other steps, I think we need to have decided what we think should happen on this, and I'm not judging what the commission will vote to do.
Okay. Sorry.
And I'd like you to hear what the commission votes to do.
So I'll make a motion to that the HPC should recommend to the city council that they amend the current ordinance to reflect the past practice of reviewing for demolition permit and substantial changes all of the buildings that are currently on the pending list and that the potential list, and that the buildings that are suggested in the consultant study for being in the landmark district also be included on the potential list, the contributing.
Be added to the potential
list.
Do I have a second?
Okay,
I have a motion from Mr. Skolnick and a second from Ms. Malberg. Any discussion? Pat, is that motion
clear enough to you?
Clear enough?
I thought it was.
Okay.
All right. And let's call the question then. All in favor of the motion as made and seconded, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed,
nay.
All right, Brent, are you the only one?
or?
Yeah, I said it twice. I apologize. I said it when you said nay, and so I repeated myself.
All right, so the motion carries with one vote nay by Mr.
Buchan.
Brent confused me. I'll never say your name right.
Okay.
And the record should reflect that we do have another member also on the commission.
Who has
currently
yeah. So, Mr. And did you know, Brent, when Tassos Somas appeared? Okay, thank you. Okay, now that we've done that, may we turn it over to Tamara to finish her presentation?
Sorry.
But this was a very good
way to go into this.
Thank you very much.
So, I would say things through the course of this research and researching your downtown commercial district that became apparent is that if you pursue designation, downtown commercial historic district design guidelines would be useful to both building owners and the HPC. We would recommend considering National Register of Historic Places designation because financial incentives. One way to a point that one of you made to build a buy-in on historic districts, and I think St. Paul has done a really good job of their Lowertown sort of interpretive district, is some interpretive materials that tell a little story about these buildings. That is something that I've seen done to sort of build buy-in to historic districts and help people understand what they're standing next to.
And you can get money to do it if you're a CLG.
If you're a CLG, you can get money to do it.
Okay.
So those are some recommendations we made for this district in particular. One thing that became apparent during our last time together, you had asked us to look into what impact technology companies at mid-century, such as IBM, had on the downtown commercial core. And what we learned is really no more or less than other trends that were happening, but what we see is that there are pretty dramatic impacts in some of your residential development and a broader urban development, and a technology industry context study is missing from your current context. And so a recommendation that we would make is that your current context study either be augmented with a tech industry context study or a tech industry context study be pursued. And from there, that would identify potential landmark properties and potential districts that, I'm going to throw a word out here, should your ordinance allow during the preparation of designation studies, those properties to be placed on what is called interim protection, it might give you some room to explore what sort of the mid-century growth is while also identifying and protecting landmark properties.
Because your downtown, the commercial districts, periods, don't address this at all. This is completely separate.
No, and we did look to see
if
this phase of Rochester's economic and business development really impacted downtown, and what we found is it impacted Dayton's. But beyond that, it really did not. But it did impact the city at large. It just did not impact the downtown commercial historic district, which is what we were researching. So what we see is the potential to identify both, industrial development, technological development, and residential development related to this space for your city's history that is underrepresented in current narratives.
There are neighborhoods that develop specifically because of IBM.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that just is not sort of represented in some of the documentation that exists right now.
Have you summarized this in note form, these recommendations? Because
this is summarized in actually the
designation study.
So it's
in here.
Study.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It is at
which
the end.
Okay.
Recommended next steps. Additional preservation opportunities.
Okay. I have a question. When we talk about design guidelines, Gail wisely has brought up the DMC design guidelines. They address heritage, but somewhat weakly, vaguely, mm-hmm. as Mark says. You mentioned Lowertown. Are there examples you would give us as good examples?
Absolutely.
To look at? Mm-hmm. That would be appreciated.
I think both the city of Winona and I would say in Minneapolis, St. Anthony Falls specifically, and I cite that because it has a number of different things happening in that historic district, and so you see commercial development, you see rail development, and you see an agricultural and industrial development, and they have to navigate all of that. digital door. What is the best way to do that? And so that gets at that kind of thing. If I want to add on to my historic building and add another story, what, where and how, and do I pull it back a bay, and does it have to be, what does a visibility study look like? So it gives some really clear guidance on how to proceed with the building itself. Which
these are
different.
Specific to districts.
These are specific to districts. And actually they exist for individual landmarks too. Really great ordinances will, if you have a historic property, might say like, here's what we're, here's how to treat your building so that you understand sort of what you're signing up for when you acquire a historic building.
Christine. Can I make a comment on that? I don't think that they would be interested in putting that level of detail. What they're after is setting some design guidelines for buildings that are applying for DMC and state funds. So I think infill is something they might be willing to take on, but I'm guessing that they're not going to be willing to cover historic buildings in any detail.
So then I think there's a question for the city and the commission, which is, if you are going to review other changes to historic buildings, what would you want in historic district design guidelines, and what would you want to reference to become part of the destination medical zoning? So infill might refer to this and how to treat your historic windows on one of these three buildings. And you can really break it up in that way and decide what you want to take responsibility for and what you want existing guidelines to sort of inform and develop.
I'll ask a blunt question. How many pages in the Winona one and how many pages in the St. Anthony Falls one?
Actually,
it could be very brief.
I would say they are actually remarkably similar. St. Anthony Falls, I would say, breaks it down by building type a little more because it has to, whereas...
Because of its heritage. Yeah.
Because of the complexity of that district.
Right.
I would say, but they were written by, I think, maybe the same firm in Colorado, so they get a little templated. And so to that end, they are the same length because there is a fair amount of education that takes place in a design guideline. So here's what these words mean. Here are those arrows of, I mean, they teach a lot of history as well as saying, like, here's what you want to do, here's what we recommend, here's what we don't.
Well, and this group is
how many pages?
Roughly
30 to 40.
Yeah, see, they're not, these aren't 200-page documents. Right. I mean, I think they're probably worth scrolling through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I can send those to Brent. You can share them with me.
Okay.
That seems the appropriate path.
And if they're dealing with buildings that are of the same era as ours are, ours are going to be remarkably like the others as well.
The recommendations by era are really very similar. And they really are to both maintain a character of a historic downtown, but also do what's best for 100-year-old masonry and do what's best for, you know, century-old wood. So they're both sort of aesthetic. They're also really to care for the building so that it can stand another 100 years. Because if you put the wrong order with old masonry, you have your own mess of problems. And so it provides that kind of guidance on just how to care for century-old stuff.
Some of this, in my opinion, Gail, is going to be separate from sort of DMC because it's specific to older buildings.
Yep.
I think I have one more question, and that is, you've spoken specifically about the area after World War II through the 60s as being unique to this town. What happened to buildings in that time period? I can't imagine there are many other design guidelines that address that.
That is...
And if there are, I'd like to know what they are.
That a number of cities are beginning to grapple with. And so where I would say Rochester is unique is, in fact, you didn't head down across the urban renewal path in the same way that other larger cities who frankly just got to the funds first did. What we are seeing in the cities with a substantial amount of mid-century infrastructure is that they are now beginning to grapple with how to treat those buildings. And they're very complex because most of the systems were experimental. And so they are having, I'll just be honest, a really hard time because a curtain wall that fails is what part are you replacing? So they have, that is something that I stressed at a conference, everyone in my field is really grappling with what do design guidelines for those buildings look like. In your district, you have two, and actually their materials are relatively straightforward to deal with.
Well, and some of they're over another substrate. They're
right.
Not really.
Right.
It's an anomaly in some way.
Right. But they're not, they didn't use newfangled post-war.
Right. They
like,
didn't use new techniques.
New techniques.
It wasn't an experiment.
That, you know, didn't work, but okay. Are still standing. So to that end, the post-war buildings in this district are relatively straightforward to deal with because at the end of the day, they are, you know, reinforced concrete and steel and masonry.
Okay.
No plastic.
All right. Any other questions?
Yes, I have one. There's some properties, as you look, they're newer construction. Mm-hmm. They're not contributing, but I would say they're somewhat harmonious with the buildings they're next to. Mm-hmm. They don't clash. Is that anything that would be worth highlighting? Because it would paint a bigger picture, like this whole a larger area has a consistent look, but maybe this property and this property are of a different era and they don't really contribute, but... It paints
not,
a picture that this feels like a neighborhood.
It's not uncommon to describe infill construction as, you know, sensitive to the
harmonious.
District.
Harmonious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because
you look at the map and it's like, well, it's just really kind of hodgepodgey, but, well, there's a lot more properties that have been filled in that actually do fit in with that look there.
Yeah. And you know, like, because I look at a lot of these, it's really actually a pretty tight district. You don't have what, you know, I think last time I was here I talked about donuts, like it's not like I jumped over two blocks, which is what other cities do.
It may not need that, you're saying, really.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if that would help it.
No, you're not contributing or very obviously not contributing in a way, but I think it is worth noting when something is sensitive to a district, always.
There's a few in there I would say are sensitive.
Certainly if I were, you know, on the side of writing the application for a certificate of appropriateness for one of those buildings, that is how I would describe it.
But there's nothing within your report that describes that.
No, we don't, because we were not charged with evaluating
with doing
that.
Yeah.
The non-historic buildings.
There's just like this one and this one. Both
all right,
are very
so folks, it's 6:15.
Okay. And you said it was going to be a short meeting.
I can't tell.
I know, right. See, that was a kiss of death when you said
anything else? Yes.
Well, I'm not sure when we're going to get to this, but at some point, I think.
Do we have any more questions for.
No.
staff, any questions?
That's fine. Okay. So I'm going to clarify I'm getting you design guidelines
for
two districts
at least.
That are similar.
And if you think of any others, please share those.
And I will. And it might be useful to actually look at out of state just to not be comparing Minnesota towns.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to look at tying another name to commercial districts, to the commercial buildings, and explaining why I did that.
Mm-hmm.
That will require a little correspondence with historical societies, so it may be a couple of weeks, to your point, just because of...
Of the words.
Of the words.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the IBM, the tech thing, what's the next step on that?
That I leave in your hands, but I do recommend that some either amendment or addition to your contact study, or might because IBM and.
But again, you haven't written that summary as a little memo to
no, it
staff.
No, it is a recommendation in the design guidelines, and from there that has to.
Okay, and I consider it separate from the design guidelines because it's part of our contact study.
Right. It is
so
a recommendation for moving forward, so I think that becomes a conversation between you and staff as a directive versus.
But if there could be a memo from PBN to staff about the identification of that, because the HBC asked you to look at it specifically because we were concerned that it was missing.
Yes.
And you've responded to that, so in some ways it's independent of this
independent
study.
Of this. I can take this and put it in a memo. Excellent. And then this PowerPoint exists. Brent has it, so he can share it with you.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but to get back to the post-World War II through the 60s, those buildings, I was asking specifically about their character because they will seem non-interesting to some people. And what I wondered was not so much materials and failures,
okay,
but sort of design guidelines about what it is you're looking to maintain. Because most of the diagrams I've seen, like your facade drawing, are of older buildings.
They are.
So I really, if there are...
I would say generally you are actually looking to maintain the form and massing. Often some of these buildings have very unique glazing conditions or lack thereof.
Right.
So this particular department store by this point is intending, like, I will say department stores that had windows are closing their windows off to keep you interior.
Right.
The department store in question here has already had windows punched into it, so
you can't really answer the question. It's kind of an ongoing conversation.
It is an ongoing
I have a feeling we're going to face some questions on this.
And that is every city, everywhere, so anything that I think like that is.
So when you talked about the other cities who are addressing this, if there are a couple of examples.
This is actually like a nationwide problem.
Yeah.
I would say, I don't want to say problem, challenge. I know preservation conferences, I was just with a bunch of architectural historians. My boss goes to urban planning conferences, and this is a question on everyone's plate. What do we do with mid-century buildings?
Well, and
they've
gone past the 50-year period, mm-hmm. and it's still mm-hmm. never been addressed.
How do we, and I'll be frank, how do we overcome sort of the negative connotations? They're not as pretty as some of the historic buildings. They're unique and architecturally significant in their own way. They're in our lifetimes, which is harder to grapple with being historic. I'll just say that. That is what everyone is kind of dealing with, and they're big. A lot of them are big.
Some of ours are small, though. That's what's so funny.
Yeah, they're big, and they're hard to use in the interior. So this is, they're hard. They're challenging.
But then you have Dayton's in downtown.
Which is all glass now.
okay.
So, that is an ongoing conversation, and it's one we're all struggling with, and the next one's going to be shopping malls when we do those. Because they do represent a trend, and they do tell us an important historical story. They're big.
They're big.
All right.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Very informative.
Looking at these notes.
We're going to talk about those two properties in the business.
Well, yeah. I may send out a memo. Brent, do you have the information on the PAM class? Just to make sure everybody's got the data.
Handy. It was in the email, right?
There's an email.
Yeah.
There's an email to all of us.
We got that.
Yeah, but just to make sure everybody's.
Hoping we have enough time to discuss when we're going to hold the public hearing, on the downtown district. I'm hoping we can do that in the next month or so, but I just want to throw that out. I don't want to wait too long on that. We have a report, and we'll have the finished report in a few weeks, and I just think we're ready to move forward to a public hearing, and I'd love to hear what the people say, the owners, because I have no idea what they're going to say.
Yeah,
they may all be what they love it. I don't know. I just like to know.
Like before we have a hearing on that, once that document gets in that final form that the commission thinks it's in final form, we need to submit that to Chip for a 60-day review for their comments.
Okay.
And then those comments will come back to the HPC.
Or she said 30 days, but it's 60 days.
60 days.
Yeah.
So you're looking at least 3 to 4 months before I think you have a hearing for the HPC.
Can I add something?
Yes.
I also think that during that time we need to do some serious education of the community and those building owners as to what this entails and what it doesn't. I mean, the urban myths are already rampant, and we'd be better off conducting that orientation or training,
before
some publicity,
before
a communication plan, before it hits the public hearing.
Well, and the other thing is that, I mean, some of the things that came up in the Carlton hearing were there are some concerns with the ordinance in terms of clarity. And those, I think, need to be talked about. One of the things we talked about tonight is demolition review, but that wasn't one of the things that came up that night. The other thing that came up were benefits and incentives, and there's a subcommittee that's working on that, which Jamie chairs, and they got a lot done before the Carlton hearing, but it was not at a point where anything could be presented in any sort of finished fashion. And we do not know what city administration, planning and zoning, legal will support.
And that's months away, though.
No, Barry, I don't know how far away it is.
Nowhere.
No, excuse me, may I finish? I think the point is, we keep leaping ahead. If we need to be working on that at the same time. Brent just gave you the time frame for submitting to SHPO. We did not ask Tamara for when she would get stuff back to us. So Brent, if you could check with her on the timeliness of that, that would be appreciated, because we didn't actually ask for that.
We did. She said it would be a couple of weeks. I mean, I guess I'm very anxious to hear what the public says. And others have said, there's probably things going around now, what Gail said. But I would like to hear them, actually. I would like to sort of have input from the community. We can have two hearings, but I would like to have input from the community about what they think of the historic district sooner rather than later.
Well,
I mean, there's a lot of things going on. There are people going out. I've been told by some people in the council going around already talking about doing things with some of the buildings that are part of our proposed historic district. And I would rather act on the historic district to settle once and for all if it was going to be one. I don't want to wait 6 months or 8 months and then find out that things are sort of allied against the idea of the historic district. I would like to know if there's any specifics that people have. I don't want it to be urban myth. I want to make it a reality about what we hear. I want to hear what other people think.
Well, I'm going to suggest there's also two different ways to look at this. You don't to talk with people, the public, about the notion of this district, and I'm going to refer to Gail's point about education. We do not need to hold a public hearing. We can hold a session where the historic district, the commercial historic district, once we get the final report, and we can say it's been submitted to SHPO, we don't have the response back, but we can hold sessions to talk about it.
Informal, non-binding discussions.
Non-binding, which is, I think, an important thing to do.
And then we send notices out to the owners that they can attend these sessions. And that's why.
I think that's a good idea.
Yes.
And it is a building.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, maybe there's something that'll just totally, change what we think. I don't know.
Well, and the thing is, to hold public hearings, so it's sort of like a, it's like a do or die situation, makes no sense in situations like this.
Confrontational situation.
Okay.
Can I add one more?
Brent's got his hand up first.
And mine's just a quick comment. Doesn't that start the clock for some action, too, if we have a public hearing? I mean, don't we have so many days and then something has to happen?
That's when a development application is in place, there's a clock that starts. Mm-hmm. Us holding a public hearing does not start it.
I thought it did. I thought there was something once we had a public hearing, there was supposed to be a decision to the owner or the occupants within so many days that they got designation or they didn't get a designation, so they weren't in limbo. And I'm bringing this up as a matter to support your comment that if we have sessions, I'm concerned we start a clock without the education, and I just don't
want...
It's
silly to do.
Yeah, exactly, which is why I wanted to just state my support for your suggestion on session over an actual hearing.
So, but I'd just like staff to comment. My understanding is that without an application in place, clocks don't start turning.
Correct.
Even if we held a public hearing, if there weren't...
But I think you might have a community open house or something.
But I'm not saying if we scheduled a public hearing on something, if there weren't a development application in place on that property, our holding a public hearing doesn't start a clock cycle. So I'm looking to staff for clarification.
So, and I'm just
let's just wait. Yeah.
Well, I was going to qualify your question to help him answer the question. I thought the Hotel Carlton had some period of time with which we were supposed to respond, and then we kept kicking it down last summer, and that's why I brought it up.
Yeah, it didn't.
Can I add something to
you? I mean, I think, Pat can correct me if I'm wrong, but since it's an application that's filed by the city, per se, and the HBC is filing the creation of a
Carlton owner had been asking for the review, would that have kicked, even if it weren't a review, if they had been asking for a designation review, would that have kicked in a 60-day time window? I think that's something we probably do need clarity on.
I was just looking to the ordinance to see if it specifically stated that.
Right now, what I see, I don't know if this is specifically the language I'm looking for, at subdivision 5 of, let me go back and find what section, 19B.08. An application for landmark property or landmark district designation shall be submitted to SHPO for a 60-day period. Maybe that's what I was thinking of when I saw something.
There's another reference to 60 days, but that's 19B15, and that has to do with the 60-day negotiation period, which is meet with the property owners to discuss heritage preservation program and benefits for the property owner, what they might be eligible for to receive upon designation of a designated property. So it says that the owner of a potential landmark property submits a land use application, a negotiation period of up to 60 days may be initiated. The 60-day negotiation period may be extended another 30 days upon a resolution adopted by the council or longer if mutually acceptable to both council and the property owner. So there is a consistent, like, let's keep this moving along type of thing so that people aren't in limbo. But I was looking to see if there was something that said a decision had to be made within 60 days.
That section, yeah, I don't know if this is, if you've got down this far. If upon the passage of 60 days or any extension, the city and the owner have failed to reach a mutually acceptable agreement, the effective land use application shall be processed as applications without further delay. So it just kind of says if nothing happens, if there's a negotiation period, then the property owner has the right to do what they want.
And it does reference consistently with Minnesota Statute 15.99, and that is the 60-day rule.
The 60-day rule, okay.
And what that says, if there is no decision, then it's approval.
But that doesn't apply to our historic district at this point, because, again, there's no owner who submitted anything, and there's no person.
And we're not on that. So I think, and so back to it, us holding an informational sessions would kick nothing into
play. Yeah, I think it's safer.
Can I make a comment? So, yes, please.
A couple of comments. I think the motion that we passed this evening asking the city council to protect the properties in as far as amending the ordinance to match present practice is huge. I think that's our highest priority. We need to button that up. I think we also need to button up any other things that have been uncovered in the ordinance. And as we roll out this communication plan with the current owners and the community, I think we also need to have the benefits that are available to them clear. I think that needs to be clear before we have
before
any
we have educational sessions.
Before we have any educational sessions. Oh, I was at because I represent Mayo Clinic on this commission, I had a meeting.
Johnny, can you close the door? Okay, go ahead, Gail.
Because I represent Mayo Clinic on the HPC, I had a meeting with the management at DMC, and they stated that the area in which the benefits
are available to property owners is something that they might be able to help with.
And I've been talking with them.
Good. So I think we need to close that loop as well, because I think some of the property owners who own those buildings now, who plan to develop them under DMC guidelines, need to have the whole picture.
Well, and if indeed, in terms of staging this, if benefits and incentives apply specifically within the DMC district to begin with, that will be a step forward. We can then evolve them for other locations beyond that.
I don't disagree with that. But I still would like to have an educational session. We're still going to do that before we have the whole benefits package to talk to them. Because that could be months and months.
We could have 5, 6, 7 educational sessions.
Okay. All right. I just thought you might be saying something else. Okay.
The other thing for people to know is that in terms of the benefits transfer development rights, the person, Donna Elliott, is Clarion out of Denver, and the firm has also done a lot of work in heritage preservation. There have been conversations, you know, with them about the transfer development rights, which, for people who aren't familiar with it, it's like, are you familiar with the High Line in New York City?
Uh-huh.
The park?
Uh-huh.
It's a park that basically goes along an old rail line. And it basically limits height all along that elevated rail line. It limits height all along that. And transfer development rights means that property owners in that transfer and the mechanism for selling it, trading it, whatever, is something we don't need to get into. They have development rights that they hold because they cannot build there, that then they can sell, trade, whatever, to other people. So again, this notion of equity in terms of you are limited by a use, but then you get an investment value out of it, is one of the things that we started to explore, which DMC is also familiar with. And I spoke with Tom Fisher at length about it.
So when did we hold our first educational?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Why?
But
that's what I was hoping to accomplish today. Because I'd like us to at least have some informational session. What do you want to do, is wait a month before we talk about
it? At this point, we don't have a final report. And I would not hold a session until we had a report that could be on our website. That is my opinion.
I just wanted to schedule it, because I wouldn't want to wait another month and then say we're going to wait 2 more months.
I apologize.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. No, I was just saying that when you create these commercial historical districts, it's a public relations effort that we really have to initiate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Barry's on to something in a way, but you know, I think you have to keep it simpler than that. And it is a public relations thing, so I think we do need to have get a hearings going and have the public involved.
Not hearings,
sessions.
Don't
hear hearings. Yeah, not hearings, right, sessions. But I think it needs to be proactive. It doesn't have to be adversarial like we talked about. I think we're on the right path.
You're going down the line?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's appropriate to schedule a session when you know what you're going to do with the session. I think to schedule something in advance. I understand the intent of it, and I don't think between now and the next meeting that we have, we have something that we could deliver to the public if we scheduled a session. So I'm not comfortable with scheduling something unless we say this is what we're going to roll out to the public and this is how we're going to do it. And I'm not saying that means we're going to kick this down the road 6 months or a year. I just want you to understand, I believe we should get it going, but tonight isn't the time when I would want to schedule a date for anything like this.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I would agree too. I would say it'd be nice to have a one page. Here's the potential incentives. We're working on them, but here's the things we're working towards. A preview of what might become. That would help also with the education thing. So it'd be nice to have something tangible beyond this report to show them too.
It shouldn't just be the report, because the report is weighty.
Yeah.
But it should be based on the report.
Yeah.
Somebody should look at the report and then be told a week later it's changed.
Well, we could take through the presentation, but also say, And we're working on incentives just to help you understand. This is, you know, we understand this could be, you know, you might be interested in incentives, and here's where we're heading. And here's, I think having some of that information at that meeting would be helpful too.
I typically would wait to comment at the end, but I'm gonna sort of plug in on what Gail said. Are you done? I apologize.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, but normally I let everybody else go. I would just like to comment. I believe we should hold sessions as soon as we can do so reasonably, but I concur with Gail that the biggest thing we've done tonight, in many ways, is move to have council address the missing aspect of the ordinance in terms of demolition review as per past practices, and the addition of any identified contributing members of this commercial district as potential members. And having said that, and having that occur, and having them know that we will be holding educational sessions and what we're going to be working on, I think are the things that put us in a position where we can roll this out well,
more thoughtfully,
and do it as Tom and Brent and Gail have said, and as Barry, as you brought up, in a way that is educational and engaging and not confrontational.
So. You took the word right out of my mouth. I agree.
Stole her thunder.
I basically struggle with, and I don't like sort of like slow moving over. I never have, and I would rather have had the educational sessions more than one, and I would like to have started them sooner to engage the owners and find out what these things are that Gail, these rumors that Gail's saying are around the street. I'd love to hear what they are, and you know, so I would rather do it sooner rather than later and do it 2 or 3. I certainly do not want to wait until the council finishes a financial package, because we could be talking a year for that to happen. It may not even happen this year. The last I spoke to the people about that, they didn't even know where the money was going to come from. So it could happen a month from now, but it might not be for a year. I don't want to put off a downtown historic district review for a year. I would like to do the educational piece. I'd like to talk to them. I'd like to do everything that these people said, except wait for the financial package. I'm not sure when or even if we're going to really have anything substantial.
It should be very clear to people that the financial package, I believe it's a fallacy and a problem for us if you keep focusing only on what city council can do, what they can finance, like a revolving loan fund.
Right.
The point is, incentives are not only those things. The TIF, other things within the DMC, transfer development rights, those are things that are all independent of what city council may choose to do. We have in place, we have the ability to have in place relatively easily facade easements. We have what Gail brought up, which is the facade improvement grant program through the RDA. So there is some, I'm gonna use Mark's phrase here, low-hanging fruit, that we can identify relatively directly, I believe.
Right, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, but Walter Mondale said, where's the beef and where's the meat? I just don't think there's anything substantial there.
And Barry,
I think
you've said it well,
right,
and it's appreciated.
Okay.
The sessions are a good idea. You should do them. You guys have said it all. The only thing is, I'm curious exactly what you're looking for to find out. I don't think you're going to find what you're looking for out there from some of these people. So it'll be interesting to see what everybody has to say, but I'm not sure you're going to find what you're looking for.
Well, one of the things, as Barry was saying it, if you want to outline 3 sessions and what would occur at the first session, the second session, the third session, I'd be very interested in seeing what you outlined.
Agreed.
I need some thought to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, that would be appreciated, because you're thinking, it seems like you're thinking it can occur differently. And I'm not quite sure, I don't know quite what the first session would be. So.
And who are you asking?
I'm asking you.
I.
And I'm not asking you to answer it now.
Okay.
I'm asking you to outline it.
Put the paper, right? Help us.
To outline it, you know, share it with Brent and have him distribute it.
Well, a lot of people that make suggestions for these meetings, I would like to really, maybe, since we're obviously not going to approve this for this meeting, maybe all of you could say what you would like to see happening in these public relations or education sessions.
I don't know right now. I honestly don't. I'm not.
Well, I know. Well, maybe some of the others have some ideas.
I'm looking. I'm not stopping from talking. You seem to have a more structured idea than anyone else. That's what I'm suggesting.
Look, I was almost willing to go for a public hearing directly. So I other people suggested having these sessions, which I thought might be a nice public relations piece. I don't think it's incumbent on me to then come back and suggest what these sessions would be.
Barry, no one is saying it's incumbent on you. It seems like you have...
I don't have specific ideas. Just saying I wanted to go to a public hearing. Gail's idea of having the session was okay. I was comfortable in not doing that. I'm going along with Gail's idea, but I'm just saying other people think it's a good idea, so we'll move forward. I just think having a general session and just feedback in general, once we submit the plan, we'll get it in 2 weeks, and eventually we could show it to the people, the owners, and say, what are your comments? That's basically all I wanted to do.
But I think it has to be structured. I think you have to have some ideas going forward, because you might end up with two people screaming at each other.
Hopefully not. I mean, I don't know how to structure that. Maybe we could bring a meeting.
I think we've talked about this enough. It's past 15 of 7.
Right.
And Brent, I don't know what to do about those two buildings.
I can...
The new business you had.
Show up to the commission if you want me to, but...
It's at the pleasure of the commission. Again, it wasn't on our agenda. There are two buildings that are proposing something that are on the potential list and got flagged, and Brent has some data to present on them, if we're willing to sit here and do it. Brent, how much time do you think it will take?
5 to 10 minutes.
Each?
No, 12.
I think what we've heard is that we don't want to comment on it tonight. Therefore, I think it would be just as effective if you emailed it to us. And maybe we have to schedule a special meeting.
But the other thing is that anytime something comes before us like this, the owner or the applicant, one of their representatives should be present.
Is it?
The two pieces are, does everyone know what the two pieces are?
Because it was a side conversation.
It was a side conversation before the meeting began.
Let me show you. I mean, I can show you quick.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
That's fine. I'm fine with time. I don't know how you feel.
So is there any urgency to approving these?
If it goes out in an agenda packet, then the public has the ability to look at it as well.
And this is,
I don't like not letting other people know what it is that we're talking about tonight.
I'm still on the fact, Brent, that we have to set protocols for how we're going to operate.
Well, and like I said, this came in after the agenda was posted and created. I'm just trying to expedite a permit for these people because they have applied for a building permit.
I know the council has set protocols too. The city council, when they don't like walk-ons, as they call it, to their agenda, this is the same thing here.
Yes, Brent.
Can we entertain seeing what he has to say and decide if we don't want to take any action? Because maybe what he shows us, we might look at it and go, you know what, this doesn't bother us or obstruct us in any way, which is why he might be saying.
It's a different point.
It's a different point, because to have that consideration, there may be different points of view. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much time it will take to come to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And it's 10 of 7.
Okay. Okay. One advantage of maybe seeing what they're proposing is we could at least go back to them and say, last minute, and next time you come to us, you got to provide this type of information so we can make an informed decision. I'd hate for them to wait a month, and then we're sitting here looking at drawings. I don't understand. Where's the drawings we need? You know, and then if they get delayed a month, they get frustrated. So I wonder if that could be beneficial.
That could be accomplished with email.
It could be. Well,
we can still ask for it.
All we have is this. Well,
Okay, I'm going to confuse this one step further. One of the things that was discussed before the meeting started was one of these properties perhaps could have been applying for an RDA facade improvement grant. And again, we can have that conversation tonight, but the person is not here. Is that a comment, Brent, that you can make to the applicant?
Yeah, I can.
And are you familiar, I mean, put them in touch with the person at the RDA?
Yep. The other thing he can do is, even though it's not on our agenda, he can, just like he's forwarded other reports to us, he could forward the reports to us, you know, in between our meetings, just for information, so we can filter the questions to him, so that we can then take it up at our next meeting. That would be a better...
Which you're trying to answer what Brent's question was, as far as seeing what is there.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, we amended our agenda. It's on the agenda now.
My concern would be if we don't, you know, we'll be here in a month, and we'll look at something and say, well, you know, I need more details. Well, why didn't you tell me that a month ago? That's what, the, you know, I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes. Okay, I don't know. That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, Jamie.
Is it okay? I need to just see, because I don't know anything.
I don't know either. I'm dying of curiosity.
I would just like to see what the projects are. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to make any action. I just want to see what they are. So it's in the back of my mind as I'm...
All right, so do we need to take a vote on this? We have a number of people saying, just want to see, don't want to take any action.
I can just look after.
Let's take a quick vote.
But it's part of the agenda. I think we just need to vote if we're going to amend the agenda to what we amended it to. We just have an agenda, stick with it, unless somebody wants to make a motion to change our agenda again.
We
right?
put it on the agenda. We didn't say what we were going to do with it. We just said that there were two items. All right, so we can do that. I'm gonna call this. Brent, please show us in as quickly form as you can.
Yep. I appreciate it.
So it's Christ Methodist Church. 400 Fifth Avenue Southeast. On the east side of the building, you can see the west Yamcha east wall here. Basically, they want to take the half of the window out on the first floor windows here and put in a single door for a daycare facility at the church. So basically, they take out this half of the window here, 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 and here, and put in
emergency exit?
Yep. Oh, it's a daycare facility. So basically, if you look at the building plans, here's the typical window. So you change into a window that looks like this, with half the window still being there, but the other half of the window being removed, any glass door being put in for exiting purposes or exiting requirements for the daycare facility.
Okay, next.
That would be on four windows there on the east side of the building. And the other permit is on Chuck's Tire and Auto, which is on the potential landmark list. Basically, they want to remove the roof there and install a new membrane on that roof. It would still be a flat roof. And then as part of the work they're doing, they would put a cap, a steel cap on the parapet wall to stop the water leakage into the parapet wall. So there's just an aerial of the flat roof, and you can see the parapet wall building. And I had to look up today to see what's there now. Basically, it's the roof deck with some insulation, and then the roof membrane with stones on top. Basically, they would be removing those stones, putting a new membrane on that would be glued down, and they'd be getting rid of the stone that holds down that current membrane on the roof. So that's...
And they're bringing the membrane all the way up all the parapet walls.
No. The whole roof is safe.
But then the capping for the parapet...
Okay, makes sense.
Is this part of the roof work to stop the water intrusion into the parapet wall?
It's if we can't get it.
So that's where we need more information.
Yeah.
I guess. Is he removing the very top, like above the roof, made or whatever?
No.
Nothing changes.
Nothing changes except for a steel top, steel cap put on that.
That's the part I'd like to understand better, is what the steel cap looks like and that kind of stuff. That's
Christine. So,
Gail.
I would have to have a lot more information
yes.
on these buildings to make any opinion. So I would suggest that we table it.
And have the people who can answer the question.
Come to us and please explain it in person.
Yeah, And for instance, on the church, that church is built in multiple phases. I need to know when was it built?
What's the
why
age
is
of the
it on the
doing?
Potential
yeah.
list?
Yes.
What is that report? You know, in my mind, I would just say if they're going to add doors, it should look as if those doors could have been there when that part of the building was built, but I just need more information.
It's not that dissimilar from when we were looking at the Avalon.
Right.
We were looking at the way the whole building was and the shape. Here they're changing the side of it. And we really have a lot of questions about it.
All right.
But I think that's helpful. I think that's helpful to provide this. This is what we're looking for, so we can make an informed decision.
But specifically on Schmidt Auto, a number of commission members think that the person should be applying for an RDA facade improvement grant.
Well, you can certainly
help. Because it will pay for fees, it will pay for...
He may have some reason for not doing that.
We can't answer that.
It's,
not even know
yeah.
about it.
Okay, any...
Well, I'm glad we heard it. Thank you.
Because
I think Brent, you can take better information back.
Yep.
Pat, do we need to table it?
Do you want to put it to a date certain, or do you just want to kind of lay it to the side until an appropriate time and then reschedule it?
Yes.
We don't know if the owner can even show up at the next meeting.
Why don't we just say we want them to come to one of the future meetings and present their stuff? But give us the drawings in advance of our next meeting. So we have it's part of our agenda package,
it's
right?
It's part of the package.
So, you know, I think the feedback you could give them, Brent, is we're very interested in the aesthetics of what they're proposing to do, right? The cap is very instrumental, and then the glass, you know, what do the doors look like? And when was that part built? I'm prepared to discuss that. So if it takes them a month or 2 months to do that, that's on them. Oh, I see.
Yeah, is there a 106 report or something on
yes.
that church? We need to see that.
On both of them,
we need to see that.
And again, Brent, we're not criticizing you because in terms of the time frame, it didn't come to you in a timely manner to get it into the packet, which is what would have happened. And I think one of the challenges is we may seem really picky at this point, but we just got to get this down so we're doing it right. Okay. So we're asking them to come to our next meeting, if at all possible.
Sure.
So, Pat, does that need to be tabled, or we didn't take an action? We're saying there's insufficient material for us to act.
If you want it scheduled for the next meeting, you can do that right now.
Okay. Do I have a motion to schedule both of these for the next meeting?
If they have all the information that's needed.
Yeah. What if it takes them 2 months?
No,
I'm just saying. I guess my motion would be to ask them to come to a future HPC meeting and present the additional details. So
it has to be part of our agenda. Too.
And it has to be in our provided in advance,
so
we can review it in advance of the meeting.
They can be church people who may want to talk about it. You know, come in and talk about it. Who are not part of the submission. Who knows?
It was helpful when we had the architect for the Avalon to talk about what his thought process was. That's helpful. Yeah. And what he could or couldn't accomplish. I see.
Mm-hmm. So do I have a motion?
Yeah, I made the motion.
I'll second.
Okay, I have a motion from Tom to schedule for the next meeting both of these applications with information as requested by us, seconded by Brent.
Mm-hmm.
Any discussion?
I think to clarify, we wanted the material provided in the agenda package in advance.
And again, I'm saying that goes without saying
at this point. We don't want them to show up cold next month.
I mean, to me, that's just part of okay.
Yeah,
any further discussion?
We'll make sure.
Okay, I'll call the question. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
One comment on the panel event. If you are going to attend that on May 8th, was that correct, Christine?
Mm-hmm. Is it the 8th?
Yeah.
Are you going to offer to pay?
No.
Yes.
If you attend, submit for reimbursement because
you can.
HPC does have a
we have a,
there's a budget.
Go.
No, so
why can't you just take a show of hands of who wants to do it and then just...
I think I'd like to go.
But wouldn't it be speedier just to take a show of hands and for the city to pay for all of those people?
No.
No. We'll bring the receipt to him and he'll reimburse it.
Okay. I'm going to go. Who else is going to go?
I think I'm going to go.
What time is it?
6:30
to 8. 6:30 to 8.
At the Plumber House.
Mm-hmm.
Looks interesting.
Yeah, it looks, and it should be
1920s.
Good. 1920s. Well, and it was basically a building boom. It was after World War
II.
And
no, I just like that era of architecture.
Yeah. Okay, now do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
I have a second. Second. So okay. Motion, Jamie, second, Brent.
There we go.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Let's never ever say this meeting will go fast.
Oh, God.
I've never, every meeting I go to that says that. That's amazing.